Welcome to Packet Pusher, the data networking industry podcast where folks who build networks for a living gather in the virtual conference room to exchange opinions, talk technology, and chat with excellent industry guests. I'm Ethan Banks, network engineer, CCIE, and blogger up at packetpushers.net. You can follow me on Twitter at ECBanks and share with me on Google+. This show is part two of show number 103, where Greg and I chatted about doing business with Cisco and a lot of other stuff. And in this program, we continue that conversation, and we're going to get into Trill, shortest path bridging, software-defined networking, what Google's announcement regarding the OpenFlow deployment that they've done really means for the industry, and so on. If you haven't listened to show 103, you might want to catch that one first. And then here we go with show number 104. Enjoy. Well, let me change gears and ask you a technical question, something that I've been pondering. And I wrote an article about whether or not Trill has a chance at wide adoption. I mean, obviously, it's got a chance in that Cisco with Fabric Path is doing a proprietary implementation of Trill. Brocade with VCS is also doing a pre-standard, if you will, implementation of Trill. Brocade is a chipset now that supports Trill. So merchant silicon vendors could, if they start using this particular chipset, the name and number designation of which I've forgotten, but I did quote it in the article, as Tony Bork had brought it to my attention, Tony Bork at datacenteroverlords.com. Yeah, it could get easier for Trill to get out there, but does it have a chance? And Trill is, think of it as the STP replacement. We've done some shows on it. It is layer 2 multipath is really what it's all about, and gives you the opportunity to build a mesh or at least build multiple channels in a loop-free topology and use all the links in an active forwarding state. The big contender here, or the big competitor to Trill, if you will, is SPB, shortest path bridging, which in March became standard, and at Interop, Alcatel-Lucent announced products that are based on SPB, and the technology there that Alcatel-Lucent happens to be calling is they're saying it's the mesh, which I don't know how long their marketing group spent on that, but it doesn't sound quite as technical as Fabric Path, which sounds very technical and woo. The mesh sounds like a cool place you go hang out after work. Hey, let's go down to the mesh. Anyway, that criticism aside, does Trill and SPB as technologies, do either one of them stack up as superior? Are they both corner cases? Is layer 2 multipathing eventually going to take over spanning tree? And it's you can have a lot of varied opinions can be defended and be considered valid opinions to hold at this point.
Yep. So Trill. So if you flip back to, we had a podcast with John Hudson just a couple of weeks ago and Andy Solomon, and John makes the point that about 6 or 7 years ago, Radha Perlman, who was the inventor of spanning tree, went to a hospital which failed because of a spanning tree storm, and she determined to do something to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
She took it to the IEEE, and the IEEE said, "We're not interested. Spanning tree is just fine, thanks." So she took the protocol, and it became Trill. Subsequently to Trill getting a good launch off on the ITF, the IEEE went, "You know, actually, and we'll invent a thing called SPB." So that's the history. A technological comparison between the two, I think it was show 44. We did a show which is SPB.
I think that's exactly right. I'm going to check right now, but yeah.
It was very well received. It's had a lot of discussion, and we actually talked to people from Alcatel-Lucent and from the vendors who are promoting SPB today, and they talked extensively about, you know, the features, and it was a very technical discussion on the two. To try and summarize that, SPB is a technically pure solution. It has the advantage of, to implement SPB, you will need new silicon, but the switches between two SPB-enabled switches don't have to have new silicon because the frame format is not significantly changed. Trill requires all of the silicon, all of the switches in the Trill zone to be new hardware because it uses Mac and Mac encapsulation to forward, to route the frames across the layer 2 space there, that layer 2 multipath space. So yeah. there's a key fundamental difference between the two.
Yeah, new hardware is distinctly a disadvantage. I mean, it's not like you're going to do someday be able to go to your top of rack Catalyst iOS switch, upgrade it, now it supports Trill or SPB.
No, yeah. You need new silicon to be able to do the SPB or the Trill.
Yeah.
However, Trill requires all switches, all silicon in the fabric to understand Trill, because it's a completely new frame format with new IDs and all that sort of stuff. Ethernet, oh, I'm trying to think of it. The word's gone from out of my mouth. How could I forget? Anyway, so SPB doesn't. So the advantage of SPB is that you could have a switch that you can form a layer 2 multipath out of other Ethernet switches in the middle that are running, you know, say EOM PLS tunnels or some sort of Ethernet extension technology, and still run an SPB core if you are foolish enough, in my opinion, to try and do that. Now, why does that matter? It matters because if you're a carrier, then this means you don't have to replace the legacy equipment in the middle. You can start deploying SPB in various configurations without actually upgrading your network core. The suggestion was on the that I got from my research and my reading was Trill is going to be very adapted for the data center. It's going to be optimized for the data center, and SPB is more likely to be a carrier metropolitan area type solution. It's going to be adopted by them because it doesn't force carriers to throw away hardware in the middle straight away, even though they should.
It's an interesting prediction. It's not going to be an either or. It's going to be a both, and it's going to be application specific, use case specific.
That's right. And my understanding is that the silicon we build for Trill will be silicon that's SPB ready too, because it's both that, fundamentally Mac and Mac encapsulation.
That is true of that Broadcom chipset that I mentioned. It is also SPB.
Yes. So in the short term, vendors are going to pick one or the other. So Brocade and Cisco clearly have chosen Trill, and so has most of the others. And then on the flip side of that, Huawei, Alcatel-Lucent, and Avaya have chosen SPB. Now, the unique thing about those three companies is that they have, and this is all just my own personal opinion and based on very limited evidence, they are all very strong in the WAN or in the carrier space. They sell a lot of their Ethernet switches. So Avaya, for example, is the old Nortel product, and the Nortel 8600 chassis, the ER8600 as it is today, was very, very heavily used by the first generation of Ethernet MAN, technologies as a MAN metropolitan area network stuff. So for them to deploy SPB makes perfect sense because they can keep all of that legacy stuff in place. Carriers are too busy ripping us off to actually upgrade the networks and give us value for money. So, keep the old crap in there and keep it running for a bit longer.
It's interesting that you talk about that from a carrier perspective, because another big announcement that came out this week was regarding interoperability. Well, I don't know if it was this week, but those three players that you just mentioned, Avaya, Alcatel-Lucent, and Huawei, said, we have completed interoperability testing. They did that with Spirent and another company that I've forgotten the name of. Okay, so they're making a case here for, who's that going to appeal to? That's going to appeal to folks that are running equipment from those vendors. Hey, look at this. We do SPB and we're all interoperable. So if you're a carrier with the relationships with one or more, or interoperate with other carriers who have relationships with one or more of those bits of hardware, it kind of makes it easier to head in that SPB direction, because they're trying to convince you, hey, this is going to work good. And it's also a poke in the eye of Trill, though, in that there is no such thing as a standards-based Trill implementation that's in production now. I assume that's coming, but it doesn't exist yet.
Both of them have the same problem. The standards have only been ratified in the last quarter. Mm. So Trill's ISIS implementation finally got ratified recently. SPB's finally come out of the IEEE working group, so they're finally out there. I think in the long term, in the short term, companies are either going to bet on Trill or SPB. Cisco, Brocade, etc., Dell are all going to go down the Trill path, and Huawei, Alcatel-Lucent, and Avaya are going to go down the SPB path. I think in 3 to 5 years, once they've got their L2 multipath strategy working, layer 2 multipath strategy working, they're going to support the other protocol. So I think that you'll see Cisco announce SPB support if customers demand it some point down the path. There's no reason why they can't just add it to the software.
And the name that hasn't come up yet is HP, and I believe HP is supporting both. They're kind of straddling the fence. They've announced a Trill strategy, and I believe they've announced one for SPB as well. Poor HP.
That's true. HP has been fairly consistent with that statement over time. So I've been critical of HP, say, in the past for keeping the Pro Curve and the 3Com product sets alive. in their products. So it didn't seem to make sense to me to have that many products in their portfolio, but they say we are not going to alienate any of our existing companies, customers by discontinuing any products. We're going to manufacture both. It's easy to do both. We're going to continue to do that. So HP is going to run that line again and say, we're going to give our customers what they want. And then what if they want SPP, we'll give them that. If they want Trill, we'll do that too. So, you know, they don't seem to find that to be a problem. So, you know, more power to them. The only question I have is, you know, without focus, can you deliver both to a high level of excellence?
Yeah, and that's why I'm chuckling. It's one of those things where, you know, I'm not a big, you know, HP networking customer. I'm familiar with the product set and so on, but it does seem that the product portfolio does suffer from a variety of mixed message and overage of choices and so on. So to kind of not put your weight behind one or the other, but say, yeah, we're doing both. Well, that's consistent, I guess, for the approach that HP seems to take with the market.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. I suspect that Trill will make it in the data center and SPB will be used in the MAN. And, you know, companies will eventually support both in the longer run. But the Trill is out there. It's in deployment today. SPB is far less common. The vendors who are selling it are far smaller and less established. That doesn't make it so that, you know, one or the other can't. And they're not that different at the end of the day, by the way. They're sort of, you know, each one is 80% of the other. There's just some slight difference.
Yeah, topologically, the construct that is created there seems to me to be very similar as to what's going on. The mechanics of it are different, yes, but fundamentally, what you're able to do and how they work are, have a lot of similarities.
And good luck with finding any information on SPB. Alcatel-Lucent puts all their white papers behind a registration wall.
And Avaya does too, not all of them, but several of them as well. I wanted to get in there and look at some of their technical marketing information about how they're doing SPB. No, you can't get it. It's all behind
a
register
wall. And I'm not going to sign up. Although I did discover a feature I have a program called 1Password, and there's a website called Fake Name Generator.
Yeah.
Which is pretty yeah. Have you seen that?
I have not seen that, but someone tweeted basically, I just sign up with a fake name so I can get in there. And, you know, I have done in the past where I sign up as Fred Flintstone and I work for Slate Industries. And if you're overseas, not familiar with the Flintstones, it was a cartoon, I don't know, 4 decades ago and so on.
Yeah, my favorite is Donald@duck.com. Now, this fake name generator takes it a whole step further, right?
Yeah.
Because you can actually have gender, country, and it gives you an address, a valid address, and a social security number. So in America, for example, I just went to fakenamegenerator.com. I have a Lauren D. Burns, 286 Lehman Avenue, Carthage, NC 28327, occupation rolling machine setter, company Jerry's Hamburgers, blood type A minus. I mean, it's all here, right? SSN 6870948. It's a legitimate SSN. Now, what I've done is plug that into 1Password as a profile. I've taken whichever one of these that one generated.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I can actually just go click, fill out the false name, and away I go.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Yes, that's
love
like
it,
getting
love it, love
clout
it
to do unicorns, isn't it?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Okay, so we were talking about Trill and SPB a minute ago. All right, so here is another philosophical question that is going to be impossible to answer, but we can speculate wildly. And that is this.
Yeah.
In the face of layer 2 multipathing solutions and several different layer 2 extension solutions involving overlays and so on, we've got the very trendy and very popular software-defined networking strategies that are coming out, a lot of which are based more or less on OpenFlow, or OpenFlow is a significant part of it, some of them not so much tied into OpenFlow. And the reason I raise this question in the context of SPB and Trill is this. If SDN really got a strong foothold, it is plausible that you can have a network that throws away existing paradigms and have a layer 2 multipathing solution that isn't either of those things. It's something some vendor created with some application and are programming switches through OpenFlow or whatever means to do layer 2 multipathing. And it's SDN, and it's, again, it's something else. And so the wild speculation comes in, is that actually going to get a hold, or is SDN really going to stay the Google-style corner case?
So now we're getting into just raw pontification. So
oh, yes.
What the hell? Sorry, question. Let's just make stuff up, really.
Yeah.
I think that Google has shown that SDN works, provided you've got a team of a couple of hundred people who can make it go. Now, if you figure that Google's WAN is actually reasonably simple compared to, say, a carrier or a data center network, they'd have a bunch of 10-gig pipes running between data centers. Maybe it's 2 or 4 or 10 of them, right? But ultimately, they've got, you know, what, 20 data centers around the network. So a 20-site network is not a big network. Critical, perhaps. Odd, perhaps. And it's not, you know, we're not talking about managing hundreds or thousands of devices using SDN. We're talking about a small niche application.
A niche application with a defined set of, like a block that generates, that does map generation or that does Hadoop or whatever it is. It's very well defined and it's very static, and they build that one block and then replicate it dozens or hundreds of times.
Now, think about the impacts here. They had enough developers to write the code that is meaningful to them. They had enough testing facilities, data centers, generators, people who knew their stuff, to go and generate a testing plan that would satisfy the technical leaders that it was reliable and would work as promised. They had people, engineers, who were able to design test plans and fit that into an overall global design and run it out. And they have a support team who are now able to troubleshoot that. So they had to teach all of the people who were doing, say, the level 2 and level 3 support of that network what was happening here, and to get them to absorb that. That is a unique thing that only somebody like Google could do.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have that, you know, you've got to think of the full spectrum of deploying this. There's not only is there the who wrote the code, and then the final part, of course, is who made the hardware, because nobody else is. Google has their own hardware here. Usually they're using their own custom silicon. So yep, did they use that, or are they using somebody else's? Maybe they've got their own. I mean, not that it matters. So then, and then one final thing is, it's not, unlike a data center, it's not like it's thrashing the OpenFlow table. It's not pumping in new entries constantly. They're just saying, this is the way we want the traffic to go for all of these subnets, go that way. And then it might change it and say, we're going to divert them to go over here. That's not thousands of flows per second like we need in a data center or something like that. So I can't extrapolate from what Google's done to suddenly deploying a WAN based on OpenFlow.
No,
or data.
Right, and none of us can. I mean, clearly. I mean, that said, I think I see the potential for SDN to do something like this. But okay, let me make a longish point. Let's say I'm Hewlett Packard. I'll pick on them because they showed me a demo some months ago of something that they were working on that was public knowledge that we could blog about and so on. They were demoing I tried to think of it as like a network in a box. You've got switches, you've got that are OpenFlow controllable, you've got a controller, and you've got an HP application that rides on top of this, telling the controller what to do, the controller using OpenFlow to program switch flow tables. Okay. With this implementation, the whole network was managed from a console and the HP application. So forget about spanning tree and OSPF and several other things. Mm-hmm. Not that HP said that this is exactly what they were going to do, but implicitly, forget all the traditional networking protocols and paradigms and so on. You could have a network in a box that just works through this one console. You set up where you want everything to go, and you're done. And from there, there's presumably automation and integration with VMware, and I'm definitely speculating on that, and life is wonderful. Here's the problem with that sort of a solution. All the brains is in that application, right? So if your network goes south, who knows how to fix that thing? Well, HP does, and maybe you, if you're the network engineer working on that network, have some idea of how to cope with it. Okay, so now I want to take that skill set and move it somewhere else. Oh, we don't run HP's network in a box. We run Cisco's network in a box, or we run Alcatel-Lucent or whatever. It goes from the world of standards to the world of, well, the only standard is, you know, OpenFlow, and we don't even use OpenFlow all that much because we're doing, you know, this other thing that no one's even ever heard of before to do what we do. So it's a very specialized thing. It's very custom. You can only use our switches because if you use vendor X's commoditized hardware, well, they don't support all the things that we need, and you get locked into this vendor solution, both from a standpoint of operationally, and then from a standpoint of your skill set, where you're married now to this one way cool way to run a network, but it's not, no one else is doing this thing. It's all very specialized.
Yep.
And that, I think, for networking, I don't see how that would gain broad adoption.
Well, okay, so just to address the closed nature is, back in 1980, say in the early 1990s, you were a Novell network engineer, or you were a Windows networking engineer, or you were a Banyan Vines engineer, or you were a IBM networking engineer. You know, I can go on and on. There were so many more, X500, you know, there was all these specialist protocols.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, I do think the network industry will probably fragment into pieces. There will be verticals, as you say, while the early stage controllers will come out. But eventually they'll collapse down into something that's far more homogenous, because the network itself is too big a platform to be fractured. So if I look at, say, a server network, which is a collection of servers, it's, you know, 1,000 servers, 2,000 servers, you know, it's a lot of servers, but your network is far larger and far more complex than your server network. Not more complicated than the operating systems or inside the servers themselves, but as a platform, the servers sit on the network platform, and that makes the network fundamental. So the skill sets that we have today to do with routing and switching and forwarding will still be applied tomorrow. They'll just be using different protocols. And we already have a certain amount of specialization today in network management platforms. So those people who are using Cisco Prime have got their skills locked into that strategy, as opposed to, say, somebody who's using SolarWinds or
HP OpenView or, right.
Well, there's only two these days, Cisco
Prime. Yeah, no, and as you were talking, I was thinking that it's been argued on this show, I think, and I think reasonably so, that we practically speaking, have vendor lock-in anyway. I mean, how many people are running HP at top of rack and Cisco in the core? I mean, maybe there's some, but not many. Well, it's mostly, typically, you've got a one-vendor solution, at least for your route switch. You may have a different firewall at the edge.
I think we'll see a lot more of multi-vendor switching, because I don't think the price of Cisco's edge, I think price is going to be a far more sensitive issue. Like, 10 years ago, at the turn of the century, say around 2000, it was very common to put 3Com switches at the edge and Cisco switches at the core, just to save money. And where Cisco has been reasonably priced in the past, they're not as reasonably priced now. And I think you're going to see a lot more price sensitive customers look at alternative solutions and say, I'm going to use two party to keep the capex down.
And the reality of it is, there's a lot of very good products out there that don't say Cisco on the front. You can very fairly go and talk to several people that aren't Cisco and find out that the products that they're offering are friggin' great. You know, there's some really good stuff out there.
Well, especially if you've got something simple, like your average education campus network for a high school is not all that complicated. As long as you can thump some Ethernet to every building in your campus, you've pretty much covered 96% of the requirement.
That's not a hard requirement to meet. Everybody's selling an Ethernet switch.
That's right. You don't need to put IP phones all over a high school campus because everybody's got mobile phones. So you don't need port security because it's best effort network at the best of times anyway. You don't need all those fancy features. And if you do, you know, you've probably got a team of people who, you know, it's not always so simple. You don't always need to buy Cisco, you know, or a vendor that, you know, you can go to a cheaper alternative and go down that path. And I'm using Cisco because that's the one that most people use. Certainly, I've done it plenty of times. Now, the other thing about SDN, which I want to point out, is that the pathway to SDN isn't clear yet. It's not, well, I don't think it is. We're seeing lots of activity in the SDN space, and we're seeing lots of work around controllers, and I've had a number of private briefings from SDN companies and all this different thing. And from my view, there's three ways SDN can go. If you're a cloud company, you're going to go SDN whole hog. So if you're the Google or the Facebook or Rackspace or, you know, one of those cloudy solutions, you want to control every single flow right the way down to the bottom, or you want to be able to control your whole network without using spanning tree, then you're going to find a way to do that. Those are so specialized use cases that I'm kind of going to push those to the side. And that's probably a gross negligence, but there you go.
Which doesn't say there isn't a market for it. It's just it's a big market with a very small use case that a few people are probably going to go after.
That's right. So where I think SDN is going to come is there's going to come down to two things. One is flow pathing. So SDN technologies that change the path of the data. And I think you'll see existing networking technologies get open flow capabilities added. And then you can put in an SDN controller and just pick out flow. So instead of crossing traffic on your network, you can actually send it via, pick it out from the OSPF forwarding path or pick it out from the spanning tree forwarding path and forward it by a different one. So instead of managing every single flow, managing partial flows. There's two ways that could go. One way is to do that on everywhere in your network and just pick out, you know, this is the OSPF shortest path to a destination and here's an empty path for specified flows. Or here's a switching thing, and all I want is I want to have a secure network for these MAC addresses, yeah, and they'll go via this path.
Or here's a flow that matches this specific set of criteria. Pump it in through the intrusion prevention setup.
Yes. Yeah. So, and that's like a pathing. So that's like a service network or something like that.
Yeah.
So you would just you would pick out just a limited set of flows and munge those in some mystical way. Okay, so that's munging the flow pathing. The second way, and the one which we haven't seen a lot of action, is OpenFlow in a switch allows you to do some pretty hefty flow monitoring. So today we use NetFlow in a switch, and every single flow that goes through a switch, or NetFlow or SFlow, you know, whichever one, every flow that goes through a switch gets ejected as a record, and it gets received by a collector. The collector then munges the data, reduces it down to something a bit more usable, and hands it off to the NetFlow analyzer, which then bundles it up into a report. So you can then see things like TCP response time for a given session, TCP flow, but you get all that data, not the data that you want, you get all of it.
Mm.
So why not program a flow and say, I'm interested in seeing the voice traffic that matches this IP addresses, divert all that into a NetFlow analyzer, except it won't be NetFlow, then it'll be some other. So you can just pick out very flexibly, dynamically controlled versions of that and then analyze that traffic. So there's a monitoring aspect to OpenFlow that I don't think a lot of people have grabbed a hold of yet. And then you've got the final one, which is where everybody's going today, which is saying we can't put SDN all across the entire network, but we could put it into software switches around the edge, so we could munge the access layer. And that's what Nasira and...
Nasira came immediately to mind when you said that.
And a bunch of others. So, you know, there's a bunch of other startups in the same space. VMware is probably going to do something similar. No doubt Citrix with their Xen. KVM already has Open vSwitch, which is OF-enabled, so there'll be some platforms for that. So, you know, you can basically program the software switch that's in your virtual machine and have a controller and then create an overlay network so you don't actually have to touch the physical hardware. But the problem with that is that, those overlays won't work in an enterprise network, because most of our enterprise data center cores have MPLS in them. So if you're suddenly going to start saying, I'm going to run a virtual networking overlay over an overlay over the physical network.
Yeah.
See, you know, this is where despair sets in. Imagine trouble like that. You know, a Nasira edge switch, which is using STT over the top of an MPLS VRF. That's just going to be like, you know, troubleshooting that's going to be very difficult.
So many headers, there's not enough left for the payload.
That's right. We don't care. That's more switches, more work for us, right? More time. Yeah, so I do, you know, which of these is going to work out? You know, it's going to come down to practical things like how do our controllers, what's our controller reliability? What about a controller that's got a big data engine, maybe a big fat Hadoop cluster on the side or a MongoDB, and all the flows get thrown into that? And then we can start munging all that flow data and to tell us about every flow in our network. I mean, forget NetFlow, which is just telling you about one point. Why not get it from everywhere in a data center? how reliable is that?
Oh, Mrs. Y, I might disagree with you.
Yeah.
Just the point I would make and agree with her is, yeah, that would be awesome to have all that data, but you'd need to munge it into some sort of a useful data set that you can take advantage of the information, that's all. That seems to be where we're incurably challenged. We get tons of data and we're not really getting anything useful out of it. Maybe I'm thinking more about security than core flows, but you know what I'm saying.
I do, and that's where I'm saying things like MongoDB and Hadoop, which is data analysis, big data analysis.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Instead of just thumping it into a syslog file and having the data and doing nothing with it. So,
it's going to take that app to know what it's looking for to be spitting out useful information. I'd love to be able to see an application that could do smarter trending than just NetFlow, so you know how your applications talk to one another. And NetFlow purports to be able to give you that sort of information, but the practical side of it is it's very hard to extract that data. Doing basically what you said, effectively, you know, NetFlow and parsing and so on.
It's, well, the thing about NetFlow is you're munging so much data so hard, and that its ability to actually give you something meaningful needs an awful lot of work. What we need is software tools, and this is where the software-defined part of the networking comes from, that actually intelligently start to say, well, you're a networking guy, so you need it to look like this. See, NetFlow only tells you about one point in the network. So all the report data and all the visual data that you gain tells you what happened at that single point in the network. But we don't live that way.
Yeah, no, you're getting to an end-to-end flow. You get to see the picture, you know, the flow from inception all the way to the end, and every point in between that it touches is what you're getting at.
Potentially, yes.
Yes.
There's limitations to the beast here. There's practical limitations. Like if you've got a 10 gig flow going across a data center and it goes across four switches, then you've got an awful lot of data coming back.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Right, so don't think I'm trying to grandstand about this, but, you know, imagine enabling NetFlow on every single switch in the path and then sending that back to some central point where you can then analyze.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, NetFlow, you actually get back the first, the first 256 bytes of the header or something like that?
Something like that. It's not right. It's not full, but yeah.
And so then the management platform then has to derive the answers from that.
And then, of course, it's timed as well. It's not a constant, you know, every time a packet flows through, it's based on the first time it sees a representation of this, and then you get more data after that as the flow progresses.
Right. So the collector then takes the first 256 bytes, extrapolates information, and hands it off. Then the analyzer has to do something with it. So then your features are determined by the software that sits over the top for NetFlow. That's what I can see. So what do I see happening? I think we will start to use Trill. Trill and SPB have been going at it for 5 years. We will deploy Trill and SPB because most networks, an autonomous solution, when I say autonomous, I mean self-healing, self-adapting, self-configuring, aside from the configuration that we do. But Trill is and SPB are truly in zero configuration. We will deploy that while we wait for SDN to arrive.
I will put my hand up for Trill, and this is, okay, my own speculation here, but I'm going to say Trill simply is likely to see more installed ports, if you will, than SPB because of Cisco's death grip on the enterprise switching market and the fact that a lot of people are installing Nexus. And for that reason, if Cisco gets to the point where you can just have Fabric Path, here you go, we're just giving it to you, or they begin including it in, you know, one of the three different tiers of licenses and so on, they start giving you Fabric Path as a feature so that, generally speaking, you can just turn on Trill and begin to use it, it's going to pick up a lot of traction at that point. As long as, and today, I don't know that it's a prohibitive expense if you're doing a large Nexus install and you just decide, yep, I want Fabric Path, license it. And, you know, they add that to what is a multi-million dollar purchase. For the smaller shops that are dealing with, you know, let's say it's a $100,000 to $200,000 purchase, much smaller for them and still a huge infrastructure purchase, a big CapEx, licensing Fabric Path is going to be a concern when you're down at a, I don't know if Cisco would consider that a micro purchase or what. It's not inconsiderable, but it's not a lot compared to a lot of the purchases they deal with, right? They're going to say, I don't really need Fabric Path today. I can get along without it. Virtual port channel is good enough. I'm not going to buy Fabric Path. So I made this point in my article about is Cisco your most trusted IT partner, and got an email from one of the product managers about that, who said he'd never heard that cost was a prohibition from purchasing Fabric Path. Well, it is. And my point would be, if you're trying to get mass adoption of Trill out there, Cisco's got the muscle to do it because they got the people that are buying the kit that can do it. Nexus, a lot of people are buying it. They're rolling over because their older Catalyst gear, they need the 10 gig port density. So they're buying, a lot of folks are buying 7K, 5K, and then FEX for top of rack. And even if they're not buying 7Ks, they at least got 5Ks and FEX, and they're doing several of them. They're building out pods. and they could use Fabric Path. For smaller installations,
it's there. I've done three networks in the last 14 months where I haven't even considered Fabric Path for the sheer cost of it.
Yeah.
The Fabric Path licenses just blew it out of the water. That's Nexus 7000 networks where the cost of the modules and the cost of the licenses in particular just blew it out of the water. It wasn't even an option. I didn't even bother presenting it to the customer. Could have used it, would have been great, but you know, the licensing's outrageous.
And, yeah, that's been my experience, your experience. I've recorded at least one Nexus show and had some other sessions with some other guys too, and they've said the same thing. Yeah, we looked at it, but for the cost, we were like, no, and it was left behind.
We're not going to deploy a new protocol and pay for it, would be the summary. But the flip side of the flip side of Trill is that it's been going since 2003, 2004. So it's nearing maturity cycle, which means it can start to move into market adoption. SPB is way behind, way, way behind. And it's still got 3 or 4 years of maturation and finalization before the vendors will, you know, get the sort of stability. And I mean, the other flip side about Cisco charging licensing fees on Fabric Path too is it also slows down adoption. So they do find bugs in the real world. And, you know, we've certainly talked about this enough, is that I'm not comfortable about Cisco's ability to produce bug-free software.
It's not even an issue of comfort. It's just a simple practical matter. They release new software. It's buggy. You have to read carefully to determine what bugs might impact you. And it's gone from, geez, I hope this is the good one, to I know none of them are good anymore, so I just got to figure out how much it's going to suck for me when I install it, unfortunately. Yeah, and that's not just Cisco. I think that's maybe others as well. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, if it was Microsoft, you know, if it's Apple's Pages where I paid, you know, $10, $30 to get access to the software, well, you know, bugs, okay, fine. But when I've just paid $35,000 for a software license for an iOS image to go on a 6500, I'd expect it to work.
Yeah.
Yep. Do you know what I mean? You know,
yes, I do.
10 years continuous development. You think the testing suites would be in place, I would think. Anyway, let's not rehash an old...
No, we don't. We don't need to beat them up on
just
that
Just to
again.
Come back to your Fabric Path thing, Cisco, yeah. I remember on the 12th of July in 2010, we recorded a runt packet, which was one of the shows we didn't number back when, with Cisco on Fabric Path. Mm-hmm. And the other thing about Trill, as I remember back from the show, if I remember correctly, I haven't heard it in, well, 2 years, really... is that Trill is here. And so Cisco started shipping it sort of in mid-2010, and we're now mid-2012, so it's been out there for 2 years. Cisco is going to be out there in the larger numbers. Trill is an open standard. Anybody can use it. The IEEE promotes SPB, but that doesn't mean that anybody's going to use it. I think, on the whole, most people are going to come down on the Trill because Radia Perlman, who's the person that did Spanning Tree, did this. I just don't see Spanning Tree, SPB, getting much momentum at all. Mm. I can't believe it. You know, if I had to line up Huawei, Huawei, Avaya, and Alcatel against Cisco, Brocade, and Dell, I know just sheer volume it's going to be coming down on the Trill side.
It'll be real interesting if Cisco makes a play for a top-of-rack switch. Well, I guess you could say that's the Nexus 5500, but something maybe in the Catalyst line that's a new product that supports Trill, or I guess Fabric Path, that would be really telling, because that means we're all in. We want to make this thing go, and we're starting to push the technology into our other product lines when they release new silicon.
Well, the flip side of this is that when you implement a layer 2 multipath core, like with Trill, is you actually move from a 3-layered switch network to a 2. So you actually do get rid of a lot of switches, which may mean that Cisco, you know, not just Cisco, but all the vendors would suffer a revenue drop for selling less products for the same space. But I think that is
a cynical viewpoint, Mr. Farrow.
Well, yes. A little.
No, that's
that's a real business decision. I mean, if you've got to respect the fact that Cisco's share price is a measure of its gross revenue. And if the share price drops because they're selling you less units, then that's got a price to them. They want to keep their revenue, their top-line revenue number high, even though they're going to struggle to do that in the light of, you know, merchant silicon and changes in the industry and the downturn in the economy. So I'd expect Cisco to pick up software in a big way in the next few years. Like Cisco Prime is a reaction to that, I think.
Well, and it implicitly in the InSimi spinoff, or spin-in, I guess you want to call it, was a software component. It sounds like there's going to be a pretty significant software component to the new line of rumored Nexus successor switches that are coming out. And then also some discussion about their an API model coming out, which again implies a software play. So
Cisco's always had an API. It's called the Cisco XML API.
Yes, you hear a lot about it.
Yeah, it's there. It's always been there. It's been there for three. I went to a talk at Networkers in 2010 or 2009 that talked all about the XML API. Just not been big. Mm. Bit of a shame, really. They've always been there. Nobody's been using them because we've always done pretty well. All I know is I'm tired of configuring VLANs at the CLI. I shouldn't have to.
Oh, I agree with that. It's we've been talking too long. We had an item here, dear listener, maybe talking about network management and operations. We've already put a hole in an hour and a quarter talking about other stuff. What do you say, Greg? Do we have a show?
I think we have a show. Let's wrap it at that. And we can carry over the network management discussion for another month.
Thank you for putting up with Greg and Ethan going on and on about things this week. And hey, just to remind you some of our contact points, you can follow us on Twitter at Packet Pushers. And, of course, packetpushers.net is home base. That's where all the new podcast shows come up. You can play them live right off the webpage. That's where the RSS feeds are. You can click there and subscribe into whatever your reader of choice is. And, of course, the blog posts are there. And we keep picking up new bloggers and adding them. And there's some really smart and capable people that are writing interesting things worth reading. Some of them are opinion. Some of them are, like, super nerdy. Some of them are things like, hey, I've been working a lot with HP IMC, and so here's a lot of screenshots on how I solved certain problems and did things. So there's a whole variety. And if you want to blog at Packet Pushers Net, it's like, oh, you got to be an awesome, incredible network rock star to be able to blog up there. Honestly, if you're interested, even just for little stuff, if it interests you to blog up there, write to us, packetpushers@gmail.com, and say, I think I might want to blog, and here's what I'm interested in blogging about. It doesn't have to be anything super incredible. I wish we had more people that were blogging technical tips, things like, I'm on a Cisco Catalyst 3750X switch, and this is how I solve this particular problem I had with SNMP v3. Awesome. I love it. Awesome. Let's see the code. Post it.
Let's do an OSPF configuration. Let's redistribute type 5s into the core. You know, let's have all that sort of stuff. And firewall configs.
You know, people read that stuff. If it's interesting to you, it's interesting to somebody else. I can promise you. So that would be really great. So again, packetpushers@gmail.com and write to us. As far as this show goes, email your comments or questions about this show, packetpushers@gmail.com. And remember that too much networking would never be enough.